Good morning, everybody. I have an extra appreciation for you all being here so well, so cold outside, so thank you all very, very much. I know we've got a couple members that are coming in, but I want to recognize the committee as having a quorum, and we can get started with our little bit of a housekeeping work here. I'm looking for Vice Chair to give us any input, any reflection on the 2013 minutes. Any comments there, Vice Chair?
Mr. Chair, I've reviewed all three pages, and they appear to be in order. I so move the minutes.
All right. There's a motion. Is there any discussion to the minutes, members? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are carried. Today, members, we've got four bills in front of us. I want to say that these bills have a plan to be part of a bill down the road, so we're going to be laying these bills over for future consideration. I'd like to invite Representative Hussein to come go to the testifier table, please, and start with your testimony. We're going to hear House File 110 on the first side of things. So, Representative, when you're ready. And I know that Representative Hussein, you've got an author's amendment. Do you want to talk about that right away so we get the bill shaped up to how you would like to present it? Go ahead and take a minute if
morning.
You need.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Baker. And this hasn't get to me until late.
Okay.
And it looks like they are changing language, and for easy to understand, deep, and also they're requesting 500 in fiscal year 2026 and 500 fiscal year 2027. 1 million.
I think, Representative, that's the original bill. It looks like the amendment is changing it from 500,000 the first 20 in 2026 to 1 million in 2027.
Yes.
So just changing that number, and that's your amendment. I want to make sure I'm looking at the right one, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Members, Representative Hussein moves the amendment to his House File 110. Further discussion to the amendment, members? Seeing none, we'll just do a voice vote on this. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Representative Hussein, your bill is now adopted or amended to your request, so please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and members. Good morning, and happy to be back here and to present the first bill in the workforce. Thank you for giving us the opportunity for me to speak in front of the committee. House File 110, appropriated HUB, has proven track and record for running result driving for workforce and economic development program that leads a stable employment and successful for underserved community and the new Americans. HUB not only serve Hong Kong, but also they serve a lot of community, Somali new Americans, Korean and other new immigrant to integrate the societies and creating jobs and opportunity. And that's the reason that I'm really passionate about it, this bill to carry, because I've seen the work that they have done in my district and also Senate 665 in the other site. They help create for nursing and give them skills and training for weeks and for those people to become successful so they can earn a good job and opportunity to integrate the society that we've seen. And the reason that I am part of this workforce because we want to make sure that everybody in the state of Minnesota, regardless where you're from, to get kind of skills that you need so they can get opportunity for them to create a jobs and opportunity. I do have the CEO who's been doing a wonderful job, and I would like to have her testify.
Thank you, Representative. And to the testifier, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Mindset Paul, and I am the President and CEO of the Hmong American Partnership, or HAP. While our state's labor force participation rate sits at nearly 68%, it does not reflect the higher unemployment and underemployment rates in the communities that we serve. For example, 65% of Hmong still live at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. Nearly 20% of Hmong adults over 25 lack a high school diploma, directly impacting workforce readiness and business growth. Since 1990, we have helped thousands of job seekers and business owners gain the education, training, and resources to thrive. We are the bridge between government and community, ensuring state investments reach those who need it the most. Since our first direct appropriations, HAP has served nearly 3,000 Minnesotans in workforce programs. Among them, over 630 enrolled in job training with an impressive 74% completion rate. Additionally, over 250 individuals earned industry-recognized credentials addressing Minnesota's skills gap. Program graduates see real impact, earning wages averaging $20.25 per hour. Beyond workforce development, HAP is a CDFI, a community development financial institution that fuels entrepreneurship. Since July of 2023, we have supported 850 businesses through technical assistance, workshops, and direct lending. Micro-lending over $1.1 million while leveraging over $6 million in private funds, grants, and owner investments, creating over 60 full-time and part-time jobs. At a time when businesses struggle to find skilled workers and families face rising costs, we cannot afford to underinvest in programs that deliver real results. Your continued investment in HAP is an investment in Minnesota's workforce, businesses, and economic future. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your commitment to building a stronger Minnesota. And we also have a loan client here as well.
Welcome to the committee. Is it Mo Chang? Okay, welcome to the committee, and please proceed. Introduce yourself, if you would, please, and proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Baker, committee member. My name is Mo Chang, and I'm the owner of Most Tropical Market and Most Tropical Wholesale in St. Paul. My story and the success of my business would not be possible without the support of organizations like HAP, and that's why I'm here today to talk about the importance of continued state investment. My journey started with a dream inspired by my parents who sold fruits and vegetables at the Minneapolis Farmers Market after coming to the U.S. as a refugee. I wanted to build on that legacy. And in 2019, I opened Most Tropical Markets, specialized on tropical fruits and vegetables. The community response was incredible. We quickly outgrew our space, and I knew we had the potential to expand into a wholesale, bring even more diverse and affordable produce to our community. By expanding a business, especially the scale that I envision, takes significant investment. That's where HAP stepped in. They understand my vision and potentially job creation and community impact. They went above and beyond exceeding their usual lending limit to investing $100,000 in Most Tropical Wholesale. This crucial support combined with fund from other partners allowed me to secure a 28,000 square feet facility, make my wholesale dream come true. Today, Most Tropical Wholesale operate as a cash and carry wholesale open to the public and serving over 500 businesses. We provide fresh fruit and vegetable and also support local farmer and creating jobs. Between my two businesses, I create over 75 jobs for the community. This growth, this opportunity was made possible by partner like Hmong American Partnership. They not only gave me loan, they gave me technical support and support throughout my process. And I'm very, very grateful, and without their support, we would not be here today. I'm here to testify to encourage you to support Hmong American Partnership so they can continue to support more diverse entrepreneurs like myself. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here, and I encourage all of you to support Hmong American Partnership and their efforts. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chang. I appreciate that. Any further comments from the author? Representative Hussein. I guess maybe a question I have, if I could, then I'm going to take it to member questions. And members, we'll see this year as we kind of walk through the process of listening to a lot of good workforce opportunities. I want to make sure that our 990s are presented to us as well in the future, so that we want to make sure that they're current, up to speed, up to date. I noticed that the most current, I think, is 2022 on your website, Ms. Tao. So is there an updated version of that we could be able to see as well?
Yes, Chair, and apologies for that. We are facing some workforce shortage even within our own nonprofit. We are up to date every year, just has not been published on our website.
And again, just a good reminder for all of us, we are all under this for good reasons, awareness that we need to make sure that we check on all of our nonprofits to make sure they're current. We look at the boards, we look at what's happening, so those going forward, we will be looking for all the 990s for anybody coming forward that are the most current possible. So I think typically this year we should be expecting at least 2023 years. So with that, member questions, if there's any. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hussein, for bringing this forward. And thanks to HAP. I know you all do amazing work. There were two things I want to ask about or just sort of bring up. One is, can you just talk about the microloans? I'm especially interested in, because I know that you and other organizations are so good about when you are making a loan to businesses, that benefits that business, which benefits the community. But then my understanding is that some of that money comes back, which you can then reinvest. If you just talk about that and kind of to what extent, I know you've got the numbers here about deploying over $1 million in microloans, but kind of about that process, kind of what you expect back. Seems like such a good leverage opportunity for us.
Ms. Tao.
Representative Pinto, definitely. These loans are called revolving loan funds, and so that is the point, is that we lend out to the community, and when they pay us back, it goes right back into the funding so that we can re-lend it out to other entrepreneurs and small businesses. We provide the pre and post, what we call technical assistance. So as folks are coming in looking for business loans, we provide them with the hand-holding through that application process. We also help them review their business plans. We do not write their business plans for them. However, we do give guidance on how they can strengthen, because that is part of their capacity building and the technical assistance that we provide. And then we make sure that they are eligible. They go through a loan review committee process. But we do take on very high-risk loan clients that would not otherwise qualify for traditional lending. Post-loan, once they are approved and we disburse the loan payment, we also provide technical assistance to make sure we are setting them up for success.
Lead Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the other thing is I really appreciate your reference in your handout here to impact and metrics. I think it's so difficult for us as legislators to really evaluate, the impact of the funds that we're investing, we're giving to organizations to improve the community. And in many cases, of course, we have years of interaction experience with organizations, like with HAP. But I really appreciate the impact of metrics. Wondering if you could follow up, and maybe you've already provided this information, but you've identified the impacts and metrics here, but then actually giving us some of those actual numbers to kind of look at and be able to compare and work with. Mr. Chair, I suspect that would make sense to you as well. So if that's something you could follow up with, I think that'd be helpful to thank you, and thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is that a question, Rep. Pinnell, or just more?
I guess it's a request, Mr. Chair, to the testifiers and to the bill author, just to follow up with that as they're able to.
Yep.
Thank you.
Ms. Tao, if you could forward that to our committee administrator, we'll get that to the rest of the committee members, okay?
Definitely.
Thank you. Other member questions? Final comments, Representative Hussein, to your bill
amended. Thank you, Mr. Baker, and I wanted to thank Ms. Small for coming forward and created 75 opportunity jobs for those people that really need it. And that's what's HOP about, creating jobs and entrepreneurs and set up skills that people that really need it. And I wish we can all support for those kind of organizations that's doing a great job within our community.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hussein will renew his motion to... We're just going to lay it over the table for future consideration. So thank you very much for coming in today. Thank you. All right. All right, next item is another bill from Representative Hussein. House File 111, the Sana Foundation, if they want to come forward and get situated. to the testifiers, too, when you do speak into the microphone, is kind of pull that microphone towards you a little bit so we can hear you. But Representative Hussein, if you want to explain the bill, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Baker and members. I appreciated the opportunity to bring forward House File 111 to the committees today. The Santa Foundation is doing important work in my community and really throughout the metro area. They are the gold standard when it comes to a created opportunity and readiness, community connection, and fun. As you can see from the handout in your packet, the workforce program, the Santa Foundation, is designed to help young people, particularly from underserved community, gain the skills, experience, confidence, and needs to enter the workforce and successful their career. This program is essential part of Foundation mission and empowering youth and building a stronger community. And as you can see, I have CEO Tony Sana, Sana Foundations, to come and testify in front of us today and to explain a little bit about the workforce and critical and why it's working and why funding request is needed for this foundation, so we can continue. I would like to turn over to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sana. If you could introduce yourself and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a handout that we printed out.
The page, if you want to help out with the handout. Thank you. We'll get that handed out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tony Sane. I'm from St. Paul. I was born on the east side of St. Paul. Grew up, was lucky enough to go on and have a 17-year career of professional soccer and represent the country. When I retired, I thought I had a responsibility to come back, and the only reason I was successful is because I had so many people taking care of me growing up. My mom was a social worker for 42 years with the county, helping people, and I believe she instilled the right values. Since building the Sana Foundation, I haven't seen people here for a couple of years, and thankfully you funded us 2 years ago. So we've been working, and since that time we've been able to leverage those funds, and our budget's grown, and we have over 100 full-time staff now, and our budget's went from $5 million to over $9.5 million this upcoming year. And we do believe the injection of workforce capital has allowed us to hire more people, train more people, and serve the community. We have an array of programs to putting mentors in schools. We do free summer camps for over 4,000 kids. We run a community center on the east side of St. Paul. We serve over 3 million pounds of food a year through our nutritional services. And it's holistic. We've adopted a dual-track model. So your investment in the Sana Foundation goes twice as far. The people we hire have a job that have a public benefit. So we're hiring people, training them. Their job is to get in the door and work their butt off to keep it. The majority of the money goes for summer internships. But the internships include learning to be a sports coach, working at a community center in nutritional services, or doing in a technology school. And I brought Kim here to answer questions if there's more in detail, and George, we're going to talk to him about. But the best thing, you know, about this, like I said, is your buck does go farther because, you know, young people get jobs, they get opportunities. Monday through Thursday, they're working. Friday is our workforce development day, so they're visiting Minnesota companies and learning and having that career exploration. So they're working, they're giving back, and they're doing something positive. I brought one of our testifiers, George, and we discussed more of a Q&A if it would be allowable, so he doesn't have to just read a long speech. And I've listed some questions for him if it would be okay if we could use that format, Mr. Chair.
Sure, that'd be fine. Okay. No problem.
Mr. George, you want to introduce yourself?
Welcome,
George.
My name is George Medina. I am 15 years old.
George, how old were you when you started entering Sana Foundation programming?
I was 4 years old, and they had to make an exception, so I had to go through the leaders of the camps and was able to play with the six-year-olds.
Yep. And George's parents moved here from California. His mom wasn't working at the time, And so, you know, having the opportunity to go to a free summer camp was really important so she could look for work and find where George could meet local kids in the community. George, what are your plans after high school?
My plans after high school, I'd like to go to a four-year college probably and study for biology. I'd also like to play soccer somewhere.
Okay. George, as a camper, why did you decide that you wanted to work at the Sana Foundation?
I've wanted to work there for multiple years now, since I was about 8, and it was always just such a fun opportunity, in my opinion, to be able to work with the other kids, and especially the other coaches.
Mr. Chair, so we hire over 150 interns in the summer, and so as we're working these summer camps, we have actually high school players and students and student athletes that are the example, and they're actually running the camps. And so George then, as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, gets to see these high school people as the job and wants to be like them, emulate them. So at 8 years old, George already decided that he wanted a job. And what happened when you were 13 years old, George?
When I was 13, I started working, not necessarily working, but I started doing the camps by myself and just for free, like not even working. So my mom, she used to take me to the camps. And so that's really how I started learning how to coach. And then the next year I got hired by them. And so that was really cool.
So our camps are designed for kids 6 to 12 years old, and then we can only hire people by law when they're 14. So George does an internship, which is called a coach in training, as he was 13, so to learn it. So now, George, how old are you, and what are you doing the rest of the year?
The rest of the year, I have been coaching and reffing a lot. I started coaching the U-10s most recently, and so that's been really fun and an interesting opportunity.
And, George, what are you doing at the community center? What kind of people are coming there, and how are you serving them?
It's really all kinds of people, and I've met so many really fun people.
Yeah. And what other skills have you learned, George, besides just coaching?
Aside from just coaching, I mean, thinking on the fly, especially making changes to camps, or coaching other kids, and a lot of leadership stuff, so I've gained confidence to talk like this in front of a lot of other people.
Do you have to deal with parents, George?
Yeah, we have to deal with a lot of parents, especially if one kid hits another kid too hard, the parents will just come and just, like, get mad at us. So it's kind of interesting just, like, to talk to them, and that's been something that was really interesting, like, learning how to do that and be able to speak with other people, especially adults.
So, Mr. Chair, as you can see and members of the committee, your dollars go twice as far. We invest in young people like George, teach them, you know, everything about working and hard work and life skills and professional development. And, you know, CEOs say the number one competency is missing in the next generation are these soft skills or universal skills and social-emotional competencies. So that's what we're building. But then the job that they're doing is also, you know, giving back to the community. So we'd just like to thank you, and please consider us again. You may have received an invitation for our gala, and although Representative Schultz is not working, it is a great opportunity this weekend for you all to come and learn more about the Sana Foundation. Thank you for your consideration, and we hope to have your support and welcome any questions to me or our director, Kim, in the back.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I do have a question for George. How did you manage dealing with some of the hot parents, though, that didn't like your call as an official? How did that work out? What did you learn from that?
A lot of calming them down, I guess, or allowing them to be able to speak with me in, like, a normal tone. So a lot of them will just get mad immediately, so I just had to learn how to deal with them or, like, just be like, okay, I'm sorry, like, I'll work on it and I'll make sure that we fix that.
But the call has been made, and this is how we move forward, and welcome to the legislature. Yep. That's a good job. You did a great job today, George. Thank you. Any other member questions for Representative Hussein or the testifiers? All right. Really well done. I like the approach to the questioning, Tony, as well, for George. I think that made it very simple and easy for him to kind of be a little bit more of an informal setting here for us. So that was great. Good move on that. Representative Hussein, looks like the committee doesn't have any questions. Any closing comments to your bill?
So that means we are doing a great job. Thank you, guys. And I just want to say thanks to Tony. He couldn't be anywhere in the planet and living in L.A. or just buying a property in Hollywood, but he came back to the community so he can create a Mother George-like and invest our young generations. And I want to thank him for all the great jobs that you're doing within our community. So we need to continue funding this kind of program so we can create and give opportunity for our young generations. We are working together also at Innovation Center that we can provide within my district. So there's a lot of kids that don't have a place for them to sleep or a place for them to eat, so we can they can work, sleep, and grow leadership opportunities. So I want to thank you for your patience. And George, you did a wonderful job.
Thank you.
All right? You will be the CEO one day. Take it over.
That's right.
Be patient. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. We will lay this bill over then. House File 111 will be laid over for further consideration in a future bill. Thank you very much, folks. Next up, we have Representative Igo. House File 263. And I also believe we have a testifier over Zoom, so we'll make sure that gets set up when we need that. Representative Igo, welcome to the Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development Finance and Policy Committee. Thanks for getting up so early for us. Ready to proceed when you are, Representative.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 263 is just a pretty simple fix bill for the Arrowhead Economic Opportunity Agency. So looking at the committee makeup, I think we have three members of the committee here today that have the AOA operating in their districts. So last session, we were fortunate to be able to secure them some funding, start working on their new project to build a new center to be able to serve our communities in northern Minnesota. Kind of ran into some hang up with the language. The agency asked for a fix. So that is why I'm in front of all of you today. With me, I have the executive director of AEOA, Scott Zahorek, on Zoom to kind of give a rundown of the bill. But at the end of the day, it's just a quick change to the language to extend the funding out and fine tune what it's for so they can use it for the building they're working on planning.
Thank you, Representative. So you're going to have our testifier.
I think he's on Zoom.
He's up on Zoom now, so if he will, when he's, it'll pop up. Oh, sure.
When he starts speaking.
Scott Zahorek, if I got that right, we see you on camera. If you want to please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Yes, my name is Scott Zahorek. I'm the executive director here at AEOA. And yes, as Representative Igo said, it's just a cleanup bill from last year, but the money that was appropriated was to be used for pre-development costs on a building project that we're working on. We currently rent 15,000 square feet for our housing department in the city of Hibbing at a cost of almost $150,000 a year. So we were looking at a new project or working with the city on an existing building that's in the industrial park in the city of Hibbing to acquire that building and then rehabilitate it. And this would be a building that we would own at the end of the day. So this money was to begin that acquisition pre-development piece of that project. We've got another bill coming in front of you for one of the main reasons that we're working on this. Really, there's two. One is for a project that we're working on with St. Louis County to take convey tax rehabilitated homes, and then they would convey them to the city that they're in, and then they would convey them to us. We're going to do a substantial rehabilitation on those homes and turn around and sell them as workforce housing, because we realize the cost of housing these days, it can't all be new construction, and this will help preserve some of the existing buildings that should be preserved, you know, and save the fabric of the neighborhoods. So we've got a housing department in the city of Hibbing working in that 15,000 square foot space that has an annual budget of close to $16 million a year. We also have five of our kitchens that prepare meals for seniors all across the Northland in 12 counties, and they're all in rental spaces in old kitchens where we're struggling to meet current food preparation guidelines and everything. And also, if we start to lose those rental spaces, we're going to be in a real pickle, because we produce almost 400,000 meals a year that are sent to seniors all throughout Northeast Minnesota. So what we really need to do, and that's the other part of this building, is create a modern commercial kitchen where we can continue to serve those meals to seniors that are homebound. So that's our ask in front of you today, is to help us convey this language so that we can get this project started and start on some of the pre-development costs for this building then.
Thank you so much, Mr. Zahorek. Member questions? Lead Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is being laid over, as is true with the other bills. Okay. And this is a question maybe for the bill author, maybe, and I appreciate it. Certainly seems like a terrific opportunity. Question maybe for the bill author, maybe for Ms. Scholine and House Research, because I'm wondering just about the legal effect of this, or whether it's needed, I guess, because the original language is so broad about purpose of expanding workforce development opportunities in the region. I guess I would think that could potentially already cover Bill, that's one question, I guess. And the other thing is, given that this is from 2024, I guess I would have thought it would have already been available till June 30, 2026. And so maybe, I don't know if Representative Igo or Ms. Scholine could just comment on those, just about whether it's needed or would be okay without this.
Yeah, Representative Igo, want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Pinto. So working with the agency, trying to get these dollars out there, kind of hung up on how broad the language was. So we kind of did some back and forth working with the AEOA. This is the solution we came forward with. Let's just clean this back up in state law. Then it can go up with no issues attached. And I believe the appropriation had to be out by June 30th of 25 as it was existing. So we're just pushing it out. So if we pass, it's not, you know, if this passes on May 19th, gives them a little bit longer than a month and a half to make sure the dollars go out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that makes sense, I suppose. Yeah, we passed the language that was so broad, and the agency is saying it almost is too broad, I guess, which is sort of a little bit funny. So this is helpful to have that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Get that clarification.
Any follow-up to that, Ms. Scholine? Anything that you want to clear up on that, too?
Typically, when Chair and members, typically when they want to use it for building, the agency likes that to be specified rather than services when we're investing in capital goods.
Good. Very good. Thank you. I think clarity is what we're looking for here, and we're going to try to provide that for you today, Representative Igo. And other member questions? Again, it's a technical fix, but it's a good thing to do. So closing comments, Representative Igo.
Well, just thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the brief opportunity today to just bring this project back in front of us and for helping me out with this fix in our communities. Again, it's not just northern Minnesota. This is 12 counties. I mean, if you look at the map and the handout, it's about 25% of the state is supported by AEOA. So they're a really great organization, and you heard from their executive director. They do a lot of good. So appreciate the support today, and thank you.
Appreciate you bringing it forward as well. I want to say that Representative Igo will renew his motion. This will be actually considered for a future inclusion in a future bill. So with that, members, we will move on to the next one.
And Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Pinto.
No problem. There was a reference to a handout, and I don't know that I can find it in the packet. And no problem for today, but just if we could just...
Did you forward that to the committee administrator? Make sure everybody gets it for us.
Okay.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate that. All right. And members, we're up to our final bill of the day. Representative Zalesnikar has House File 105. Again, we'll have another testifier on Zoom when it is that time. This bill will also be considered for a later bill to be laid over. And good morning, and thanks for being last on the docket today. Representative Zalesnikar, please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Chair Baker and members. This bill is a workforce development bill through deed for Lakeview Aspirus Hospital, which is a critical access hospital in Two Harbors, Minnesota. So this is a community that serves those that live there as a critical access hospital, work in that community. We have many industries that are up on the North Shore, but also many of you probably travel up the North Shore. And it's a beautiful place in the state, and it's become a very strong tourism area, which is fantastic. And so the hospital plays a very vital role for people when they're going up the North Shore. What this program does is a career technical education pathway that allows for CNAs to be trained in the hospital. And so they're seeing a shortage happening, and so we're needing to grow our own, so to say. And this program, I think, will be an essential, vital role for them to make sure that we have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. They're struggling right now having enough staff at various times, as most of the state is. And so we're looking for some solutions, and I think this is a great pathway. The career technical pathway education has been a strong focus, and I think that we're bringing back some of the models that existed back in the 80s when we had a lot of, I had, you know, health occupation class in 10th grade and became a CNA at 16. And having been a nursing home administrator, I had many CNAs that were working at 80 years old, if you can believe it, in great health, working and showing up for work every day. So being on the aging task force, you know, we talked a lot about ageism and the fact that many people are working at 60, at, you know, at 70, at 80, and I saw that. And so these are just opportunities for people to work part-time when they want to and stay in their community and do what they love. And I would like to have the testifier then share a little bit for the CEO from back home.
Thank you, Representative. I will turn it over to Greg Ruberg, who's on again on a Zoom call. Mr. Ruberg, if you can hear us okay, please proceed with your testimony and introduce yourself as well.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Greg Ruberg. I'm the president of Aspire Lakeview here in Two Harbors, Minnesota. I want to thank you all for the opportunity to testify this morning. As Representative Deslezikar noted, we're a 25-bed critical access hospital, the only hospital serving Lake County and our adjacent Cook and St. Louis County as well. Our current challenge really stems around the lack of supply of CNAs to support our hospital in our care delivery system. We've had a number of CNAs work at Lakeview for decades, with the most recent one retiring just a couple of weeks ago after 45 years working as a CNA in our hospital. I was fortunate enough to work alongside of her when I was a physical therapist at Lakeview for many years, so I've got firsthand knowledge of the great work that she did, and again, the great work that she did when I was in this role as the president. Really, there's been a shift in the nursing profession most post-pandemic in terms of really people that are seeking work in the healthcare field, especially the nursing profession, will kind of skip over the CNA and move right into LPN or more likely into the RN positions. This is because they're really opportunities for wage, different jobs, flexibility, and accelerated training programs. We're also seeing significant competition from local employers like Quick Trip, fast food establishments, and big box stores, Costco, Walmart, et cetera, for wage and benefits that make it really difficult for us to really recruit and entice people to join the healthcare field, which, as you all know, is a 24/7, 365 operation. Really, the impact on patient care here in Lake County and across the state is significant. The healthcare ecosystem is very interconnected and interdependent. And so when we have a shortage of certified nursing assistants in our hospital, the impact on us is very direct. We can't admit all of the patients that need to be admitted because we don't have the kind of direct patient care staff to support that. The other issue we have is when a patient presents to our ED or our hospital in mental health crisis or with dementia, we often have to provide one-on-one care, and that care requires a CNA. When we can't find a CNA, we have to pull an RN out of the emergency department or the inpatient unit to provide that care, creating significant staffing challenges for us. The other issue is a shortage of CNAs affect our skilled nursing facilities and assisted living, veterans home, and other congregate care facilities in our county. Now, when that happens, we have a direct impact on our hospital here at Lakeview. If a local skilled nursing facility does not have an adequate supply of CNAs, what they then do is shut down to admissions, meaning that we can't discharge patients out of our hospital here in Two Harbors, and the tertiary hospitals in Duluth can't discharge their patients out of the hospital into the appropriate care setting of long-term care. When that happens, we create a bottleneck that kind of backs up the entire healthcare ecosystem. The other issue we've seen kind of post-pandemic is when a local skilled nursing facility can't staff appropriately, they end up dropping off their resident in our ED on a Friday night or a Saturday night because they can't safely care for that resident. Again, that shifts the burden to us, and again, we are not always fully staffed either, so it creates a significant challenge for both us and those facilities in our community. The tertiary centers in the large cities are also impacted, like I said. If there's a shortage of CNAs in Duluth at either one of the large hospitals, they can't accept patients from the region, which backs them up in our facility here, which means we can't get trauma, strokes, cardiac patients out for the appropriate care setting. We've tried many attempts to overcome this challenge. One of the things that we've done is aggressively recruit. We've tried to promote the healthcare field. We put signing bonuses in place. We've tried to create flexible work environments for students in college and in technical schools. They can work kind of around their schedule. The challenge with this is the more aggressive we become, all we do is we really recruit or pull people away from other facilities like skilled nursing facilities, veterans home, group homes, et cetera. And again, that's not good for our community, not something that we want to do. The other thing we've done at Aspirus Lakeview is try to build an organizational culture that is very supportive of our workforce, including our CNAs. We're running an annual turnover rate right now of under 7%. The industry standard is 20.7% across the U.S. We're still struggling to hire CNAs and bring them into our organization. Right now, we've actually have 4 travel CNAs working to support high patient need across Lake County. We have never had 4 travel CNA positions in my 25 years at Lakeview, more or less my 11 years in this role. So probably the 4 right now is more than we've had in the 9 years previous combined. And it's the state of the industry across the state and across the country, so we're not unique. The proposed solution, as Representative noted, we want to look at a creative and innovative model to grow our own. I don't want to come here and complain about the workforce issue and say that we're in really challenged. We have an option or a plan to really address this. What we're proposing to do is really train 12 CNAs at Aspirus Lakeview and Two Harbors to support all of our county and the adjacent counties. How this would work is we would provide funding for a student to enter the healthcare field as a CNA. We would cover the cost of training, instructors, testing, hands-on supplies, et cetera, so that people could really enter the healthcare field and come out with a really good job supporting our patients and our community with a really affordable wage to really support their families. We have had success with this in the past. Many years ago, we've run a couple of different CNA training programs at Lakeview in partnership with Lake Superior College in Duluth and Mesabi Range College on the Iron Range. What we need now is funding to restart this program to kind of hit a reset to bring more people into the healthcare field at a time where the entire industry is strained. So I want to thank you for consideration of this plan. I want to thank Representative Zeleznikar for her ongoing partnership and helping us to kind of proactively and strategically address the workforce issues that are present in her district and across the state. So thank you again. I'm happy to take any questions on this proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Ruberg, for your testimony. We do have a member question. Representative Wayne Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Mr. Ruberg. I just wanted to comment on this as how reality it is. Even down in the cities, my daughter, who's 20, is working as a CNA. I think they call it a little bit different at Regents, patient care. It's the same situation where it's very desperate. I know the Hastings Nursing Home was basically bringing in people that were interested in CNA program, and if they were willing to work there, pay for their program. I know it used to be quite an expensive program, and now its facilities are coming up, like in this situation, trying to bring people in. It's very dire down here, too. She'll give us a call. She'll work from 3 to 3 in the afternoon to 11 at night, and we're going to get a text saying somebody didn't show up. I'm working a double. So she's working 16 hours, and then she's going to school the next morning as she goes for 1 degree while she waits for the nursing programs, which are full and waiting lists. And so it's going to require more and more needs for these CNAs to cover these situations, and she works in a like an emergency room aftercare at Regents, and she loves it, but you know it's getting kind of straining. So I fully support something like this because we're going to have to, and as we've discussed already on this panel, it's going to even get more challenging, and if we're going to have to come up with these programs to bring people that can backfill some of that support. Well, because we just can't get enough nurses out there, and we're going to be dealing with staffing issues. So very, very understanding when I'm listening to this. It's just like taking it in, like, yep, that's my daughter's situation and what she's seeing at Regents in the cities. And we all know if it's happening in the cities, you get it to the outstate where less populations is even more extreme. So I can see how important this a program or a bill or funding like this would be. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Other member questions? Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representatives Lesnikar. And I actually just have a bigger question for our work, because I think to Representative Johnson's point, since I have been here, my sister started as a CNA and is now a nurse, but we have heard about sort of the issue of both workforce for our CNAs and also our nurses in the healthcare industry, and both needing to recruit and train and to deal with workforce issues. And I was thinking that this is a statewide issue. I'm interested if we have lots of hospitals who have this kind of workforce training program. I know we have some of our colleges and junior colleges do, but I'm just sort of wondering, as we think about what is likely not just an issue in your community, but in all our communities, to Representative Johnson's point, how we think about it a little bit more statewide.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. I think, again, it's kind of a question to Representative Zalesnikar, because we've kind of asked that too. So maybe you could maybe address that with your thoughts to this, because, again, Representative Greenman has a good point that this is not just isolated, but your thoughts to the bill on this.
Thank you, Chair Baker, and thank you, Representative Greenman. It's a great question, and it's something that I've been working across the state and going to help you too in your community. It is a statewide issue. In the 80s, I worked 16-hour shifts to the point of your daughter, and we thought we had a crisis then. It was not. And when I'm talking to providers across the state now and to aides and to people in caregiving roles, in some places it's worse than the pandemic, which is hard to believe because I worked through the whole pandemic. And I was one of the people sleeping on the floor in a dementia unit to care for people, because to the CEO's point, when there's not an aide and the ambulance comes in, and you need one-on-one staffing, you're often seeing the CEO, the nurse, it's a downward cycle. And so then you're moving people. So then the reports aren't getting done. All the other requirements to the state aren't getting done. And it's a constant thing. And people can do 16-hour shifts, you know, and we do it. I've done many of them. The problem is right now direct care, when you're doing heavy, aggressive care in that lane, we have to find some solutions. So there's been partnerships with the school. I've been meeting with the University of Minnesota. Last year, you might remember, we did a bill with the creating a center of excellence to grow more RNs with the state schools and the University of Minnesota. And you'll hear more about that sooner than later. But as we are doing that, it's creating these pathways for CNAs to love the field again. And a lot of people chose other pathways because they were just burnt out. And it's getting them back in. And at a local level, when you create relationships with people you know and create that bond, you can get that love back for what it is. Similar to education, similar to public safety, similar to everything, it's building back the morale is really critical right now coming out of a pandemic. And in one-on-one time like this, like a program like this, is essential. But it is happening in pockets across the state. I'd like to see a way to put together a full state map of where we're doing it. And I've been working on, with Representative Frazier, too, on the barriers to access for the CNAs with the criminal background check time frame, that whole thing. There's many bottlenecks for CNAs, and to keep them and to retain them. So it's a great question. We're going to continue working on that and growing it for everybody's community, because it's really important.
Thank you, Representative. Any follow-up? Yes, Representative Greenman.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Baker, and I really appreciate that. And it's probably not fair on what is a relatively small bill, and I appreciate hearing more about the work. I think it highlights the sort of one of the questions for this committee and one of our approaches, which is when we think about workforce. Sometimes when we hear all these different workforce bills, we don't get a chance to think more broadly, to your point, about how we're thinking about sort of the key, I think healthcare is whether we're talking about CNAs, pathways to RNs, is a huge issue that they're talking about in the health committee, hopefully, that we're talking about human services. I know we're talking about it here. And I think we think about whether it's with DEED and whether it's a sort of ongoing grant program or whatever it is, I think it'd be worth thinking about. I know it also pairs to the other part of this committee, which is labor and how we're making sure that it's a job that provides a career path and family-sustaining wages and benefits. And so those, to me, think when we're doing our job, we're thinking about all those things together. And so that's a thing I think this committee should think about. That is your bill is an impetus for. But I know your bill does not solve, nor should it. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. First, just one question. Were there any materials on this bill that we, and no problem if not, I just want to make sure it wasn't any, something that I was missing. No. Okay, thank you. Yeah. And then, building on Representative Johnson's point, Representative Greenman's as well, and maybe this is directed to the testifier, because I completely agree this is a statewide concern. I'm wondering, will these materials be kind of, are they off the shelf, something that the hospital is planning to develop itself? And I'm just partly thinking about efficiencies, that if there is a need all over, kind of how we can, potentially this is something that we would do at this hospital and then be able to expand, or just trying to think that through. If the testifier can talk about how this might fit in with a statewide approach.
Maybe that was a question, Mr. Ruberg, if you're
That's what I was thinking.
Could hear that okay.
Yes, I'm happy to address it, Mr. Chair and committee members. I also serve on the Wilderness Health Board of Directors. I'm the board chair of a 9-hospital group of northeastern Minnesota. And so to your point, whatever we build at Lakeview this round for CNA turning, I absolutely will be sharing with all 9 hospitals in our coalition. Again, I think for efficiency's sake, if we build a model that works here, we can fund it. Every community has the exact same issue, to all the points that have been made on the committee already, whether it's Cook, Big Fork, Ely, Grand Marais, regions all over the state. The other role that I serve on is I'm on the Minnesota Hospital Association Board of Directors, and I'm speaking with hospital leaders across the state on a weekly basis. And again, I'm hearing the same stories about CNA shortages, RN shortages, physician shortages. It's healthcare is really in a challenged environment right now, so we're all working together. So again, I think we can be assured that whatever model we roll out, we've got a strong model being proposed here that we'd expand it to the 9 hospital group in northeastern Minnesota and then share it broadly across the state about here's a model that others could just basically take off the shelf and use. I think we have to look at that across the industry. We can't be recreating programs in each individual community when the needs are pretty much the same across those facilities.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifier. So is there not a pre-existing CNA training program? Because I'm sort of thinking, like, if... Yeah, so maybe I'll just ask that question of the testifier. Is there not something that already exists, which is not to say there wouldn't need to be funding for it to be used, right? But I guess I'm a little bit confused about that.
Well, and I think I heard, too, that this is also through Lake Superior College. So I think there's a program that's accredited already, too, but maybe the testifier can confirm that, if you could, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members. What we've done traditionally is in our community we've really – suggested or recommended or tried to convince people to go into healthcare. So traditionally, we would say, we've got CNA openings at Aspire Lakeview. If you go off and get this training, become a CNA, you can come back and we'll hire you. Now, that used to work pre-pandemic, and it's the same thing with clinical assistants. It's the same thing with many other healthcare professions. What we're hearing from our members in the community are saying, I can't afford to quit my part-time job, to go off to go to school, to pay for the tuition, the books, the exams, and really impact my schedule. So it might be a transportation issue as well. We don't have a training program here in our community. So what we're looking at now, I would say around the innovative and creative model, is saying, we're actually taking this on and we're going to do it right on site at Aspire Lakeview. We're going to convert our old large dining room into an education room and say, to our local community members, you go down the block, come to Lakeview, we're going to support you through the entire training. Oh, and when you're done and pass your exam, we're going to hire you, so you step right into a job with a signing bonus. And again, we're confident we can hire a number of these individuals. I'm also confident that our skilled nursing facility one block up the road would hire a large number of them as well because they're short-staffed. The Veterans Home in Silver Bay would hire the remaining. So there is a need out there that would be met quickly. It's just that the individuals can't afford to go off. One example I would share, we tried this in the clinic, and this was eye-opening to me. We created a clinical apprentice program for our clinical assistants that would support a physician in the clinic, the outpatient clinic. So we basically hired somebody, we paid them to go through the training, we gave them clinical experience for half of the day, and we paid them to study the second half of the day, and we're still struggling to get people to go into that field because of economic reasons, transportation, family issues. And so this is kind of going all in to say, we're here to support you. This is a really good wage. Our average wage for CNAs at Lakeview is $24 an hour. So it's a high-paying job, and it's the backbone of our organization. We can't run an inpatient unit and an ED without CNAs. And to Representative Seleznikar's point, we have RNs stepping on the floor to help. We have directors of nursing. I've stepped on the floor to help as a PT to work as a folk CNA just to provide some relief to our RNs. And luckily, I've got the clinical background to do that. But again, I can't do what a CNA can do either. I can be there to answer call lights and those kind of things. So we're looking at more of a innovative, creative model to bring people here, train them, and give them a job.
Follow up, Lead Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and to confirm, and I appreciate the time to discuss this, and no question about the need to address the CNA shortage statewide. I guess what I'm trying to just explore and think about is the most effective and efficient way to do that, recognizing this is one individual hospital, but then every single person around the table presumably has hospitals dealing with this. I may have one or two additional questions, but I actually think Representative Kozlowski, you referenced Superior College, and I think Representative Kozlowski may have something to ask or about relating to that, Mr. Chair, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine, Representative Kozlowski. And then we've got a couple more members on the list I want to get to.
Thanks, Chair Baker and Rep. Zlesnikov for bringing this. I was just looking at the language, and, yeah, thank you for clarifying, like, Superior College. And I know that there's issues with transportation and those types of things of why this is important in, you know, specifically up the shore, which is just about, for reference, 20, 25 minutes up from Duluth. I was curious, like, for the language and the director from Aspiris mentioned this, that there could be a benefit to different employers in the region, and I see the language says for local employers. So is that I'm just thinking, like, the Aspiris is part of the St. Luke's system, or, you know, Essential Health serves that area. Is the intent that it could also potentially serve people who come to work and then get a part of that system and then can grow their way up from there? So just curious if that's broader than just kind of the Two Harbors region.
Representative Zlesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Kozlowski. That's a great question, and absolutely that's the intent. I mean, this what this program's really modeling is similar to the EMS bill I wrote last biennium, where we trained the EMS locally as a pilot program, and it's working. And so to take it into Lakeview, where they're used to this right now, in Two Harbors, to model that same thing we did with EMS and to move it into CNAs at the hospital where we have a critical access hospital. Because the reality is, it's, you know, for traveling up the shore, it's often an hour for people to get back to Lake Superior College from where they live up on the North Shore, from where they live to get to college. So this is a community-based model. And the way Medicare runs its rules with CMS, because hospitals have federal funding and so do nursing homes, you have to have training in certain settings. So you can't have them trained in assisted living. There's rules to be for the CNA model. So this would facilitate that without people having to drive long distances, which is a big barrier to get them to enter the field. So I think that it'll have success for the whole region, and it's just going to be another area, another avenue for people up the shore to not have to drive into school far distances.
Thank you. Follow-up? Representative Kozlowski.
Rep. Zlesnikar for that. I was also curious if it is going to be ongoing. I know the language says for 12 new CNAs. Is this $42,000, which is pretty small investment, but in terms of, is it one time with the intention to create the program, or is the intention really only to create 12 new CNAs?
And to members, too, just our microphone's got to be pulled down a little bit when you're speaking, so kind of just eat them a little bit. So I think you heard the question, Representative Zlesnikar, so if you could answer that, that'd be great.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question, Rep. Kozlowski. This is an initial grant, one time. We'll train the 12, assess it, and find out. I want to see, and I believe it's going to be successful, but I want to see the data. So we'll report back next year, and if that's the case, then have it more of an ongoing. But this is just a one-cycle funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Baker, and thank you, Representative Zlesnikar, for this bill. And I was just listening, Representative Greenman and Representative Pinto, to all of our and I believe Representative Baker is probably going to be speaking right after me, almost the same thing. Both Baker and I, being in the education world, have talked about how important apprenticeships are and trying to find how we can create more pathways into these high-demand, high-paying jobs, desperate jobs, and thinking outside the box, being able to partner with private entities and doing those things. The biggest barrier that we have found has been how Minnesota Department of Education has responded to these. And so one of the questions that I've often asked people, and maybe I can ask this chair to our testifier, is outside of funding, has there been any barriers for you to do this already? I mean, if we understand that funding is an issue, but could you have already done this? I mean, I know funding, but could you have already done this, but you ran into barriers because there's been some regulations or guidelines that maybe higher education or other type of education has blocked you from doing that. And if you don't know, that's completely fine. But those are things that Representative Bakeberg and I have talked about quite a bit, and how we can make sure that we as agencies are working together to create pathways much better. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Ruberg, did you want to take a stab at answering that question?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair, committee members. I can share some experience at Aspires Lakeview. Back, 10 plus years ago, I was in a different role. I was the director of rehab and had a number of departments. I was actually directly involved in training programs for CNAs. The crisis level was much different. It was a challenge then, it's a crisis now. But we had two really programs that we ran, and I'll kind of speak to each one. One, and they're very similar. One was using a partnership with Lake Superior College in Duluth, which again is a 45 to 55 minutes away from us here. The second program we ran was in partnership with Mesabi Range College on the Iron Range. And so both of those were looking at more of a regional approach. The issue really always comes down to funding of these, because what we saw was the people who were interested just couldn't step away from their jobs to commit to this and really pay for all of the expenses that were associated with becoming a licensed CNA. And so we always struggle, can we get enough people in the program? Can we entice them enough to go through this? Because once they're through and get licensed and get a job, I think then they recognize, the ones that went through and said, this was great. This was, you made an investment in me. I'm now loyal to the organization. I'm going to stay. But in terms of the partnership with the educational institutions, I was actually impressed that they wanted to have full classes. They had RN instructors that we could basically contract with to bring on site. And then we just created skills labs right on site here at Lakeview that said, here's a mock hospital room. And so they could go through all of that type of hands-on kind of clinical work. So the funding is the critical area here. Again, paying for all the expense to get somebody to really choose this, pursue it, make it through, and then get a job. I think once we get them, I'm confident that our culture here and the environment we work in and this calling of serving your community will be enough to keep them in the profession. I just don't think we're getting the people considering it, making that step, because there's economic considerations, transportation considerations, that all comes down to economics, which I would argue is probably more challenging now, clearly, than during the pandemic or pre-pandemic. It's a way harder time to run a hospital and clinics now than it was at the height of the pandemic, which sounds really odd. But it becomes a workforce issue and really a financial issue for the industry as a whole.
Any follow-up? Okay, thank you. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, good conversation. And Representative Mueller kind of stole my thunder, to be honest. But I just as Representative Pinto was talking and Representative Greenman was talking, it just really brought to light this whole pathway conversation that a lot of our high schools are doing. So oftentimes we talk about higher ed and what we can do at higher ed, but our testifier just brought up some of the real barriers that people have. And so I texted with one of my colleagues and I just said, okay, so help me understand the issues that we're running into with this CNA pathway. And we've had lots of conversations in the district that I work in, but also where I represent, and there's really good pathway programs in each of the districts. But one of the barriers is a requirement from the Department of Health that you have a qualified nurse to co-teach a class at the high school level. So frankly, we just can't find someone to partner with that. So we're not able to ensure that those kids in their junior, senior year that are taking this this course are able to get the certification. Now, the kids can go on and take a test, and then we get into some other barriers there that could be in place. So if something that we really dug into is how do we get creative within these pathways, and this is going to move into multiple areas that we talk about. So, and then the other side is a seat time requirement within the Department of Education, because our, and Representative Zlezikar talked about it, a CNA program, going to an assisted living facility or to a hospital facility, it doesn't necessarily fit within the, 8-to-3 schedule of a school day, but kids are learning outside of that time as well. So thinking about how do we look at that seat time requirement within the Department of Ed, and then how
things connect with the Department of Health as well. So there's a lot of overlap and some good work to do, and I just really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Lee Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been a really good conversation. Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar, for bringing it up. I will say that I, just because of my areas of policy focus, I haven't thought so much about the CNA shortage and just recognizing, as folks are nodding around the table, it is such a significant concern, so I appreciate it. And so I guess, Chair, you and I have had some preliminary conversations about kind of where things will end up with the budget and how to think about the Workforce Development Fund, and I feel like thinking strategically about the best ways to use, this is obviously a relatively small amount of money proposed in this particular bill, but thinking more broadly about how we can address the CNA shortage and worker shortages and other critical areas. I think, so I guess I'm interested in continuing to talk with you, Representative Zalesnikar, and you, Chair Baker, about kind of how to come at this in the best way, but it's been a good start. I wondered, Mr. Chair, whether you'd consider sending the bill to the Health Committee for consideration, given what we're talking about health and hospitals. That's not intended to slow things down. It would be laid over, and so our committee can consider regardless. But I wonder if that might be, there might be some benefit of a conversation if you've talked to Chair Backer, if Representative Zalesnikar has, because there is sort of a health expertise brought to bear that some of us don't necessarily have. At least something to consider, I guess, Chair Baker,
yeah, Representative Zalesnikar. Representative Pinto, thank you for that. Again, having served on that committee for many years, we talk about the workforce issues a lot. I think this actually is where this one belongs. I think they're having other conversations about maybe some larger pictures. How do we incentivize some of these bonus programs, incentives to get into it? But I know that I'll keep in touch with Representative Backer on this and Representative Schumacher and others. Again, we can have those discussions, but I think this bill for this reason is well-placed here. And to all the members, too, this is the first day of a lot of kind of micro bills about helping smaller areas, smaller workforce. We've got to make sure that we honestly look at the mirror about how can we get people to want to be in these positions and help them get there, but also what's preventing employers from doing things to get more of them on that side of it, too. So, again, I always want to make sure we're looking at this balanced approach about the policies that the state of Minnesota has for employment purposes, but also how can we kind of encouraging them, but without making it harder for Mr. Ruberg to kind of hire them as well to make sure that they can afford those going forward. So first good day of talking about some important areas of the state of Minnesota, and I'm glad we're able to do this today. Any further member questions today? Seeing none, Representative Zalesnikar, thank you for presenting the bill today. It will be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Tomorrow, members, that can kind of conclude our business today, but tomorrow we're going to be listening to the agency, Adeed, to talk a little bit about the information technology and what's coming. Where are they at with the paid family medical leave rollout? So that'll be on the docket for tomorrow, members. With that, we are adjourned.